And Shagar, big news in the CFL today. David Brayley passing away, the longtime owner of the BC Lions, and I'm sure you've seen the stories in regards to kind of the uncertainty of the CFL's future. As a guy who's been on the sidelines lots, what do you make of kind of, you know, the, like, every league's in a holding pattern, but the CFL canceled the season while the NBA and the NHL and the NFL and MLB, they're all still playing. How much of a concern is it that if they went dark for a second season?
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be a major concern if that happened. I mean, there are ways away from having to make that determination, though, are they not? Like, they've obviously been dark here, through the, you know, these last months when they normally would have been playing, but I mean, their season would start up like, you know, May, June, July kind of thing next year. So I think we've got a bit of runway between here and there, don't we, to sort of see where things are at. You know, it has the benefit of being the Canadian Football League, you know, all things happening north of the border where, you know, you don't necessarily have the same week-to-week travel across the border that causes problems for other leagues. And so once you have players here, so I think, you know, they'll probably take their lead and see what the National Hockey League does with all their Canadian clubs and see where things are at. But yeah, obviously it's a concern, like, for sure it is. You want the CFL to be healthy and vibrant, and our network plays a big role in that with the TV deal. I make my living covering the league, so for all the players and the staffs and everybody, you want it up and running, for sure. And certainly, with the news today out of the league, people look at somebody who was a part of it for a long time and, you don't remember his contributions. So it's kind of a day of, like, I'm not surprised people are sort of reflecting on the overall where the league is at and you know, where it's going, because Brayley was a large person in the game.
Yeah, it's pretty unique. Like, it's so CFL that he owned two teams at one point.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, I remember I used to get abused by guys, the Americans, you know, like, the two names and all that stuff and not a lot of teams. But to me, I guess it was an ideal. But did you ever get the sense around the league offices and around different owners that it was a real big deal that Brayley did own the two teams at one point?
Well, unorthodox and not ideal. You know, it's the Canadian Football League and things, you know. Yeah, it's not always going to just be true to form to what we're used to seeing and hearing about among the major sports in North America. So definitely a little bit of a different setup. But I mean, he was a big figure in the game for a long time. You know, part of all the executive committees and you know, very involved in everything. So I mean, it's kind of sort of uniquely CFL in some ways, I guess, Reddy.
Yeah, there's no doubt it is pretty unique. And I often wonder what would happen if the two teams had met in the final. You know, as far as how would you cheer for that? Like, you know, I guess it wasn't that unlikely. It's not like there was 31 teams, but I always, and that's what the guys always gave me a hard time about. I just always wondered what would happen if that would have shaken down.
Yeah, well, I guess you just, either way, you're going to be celebrating. So I guess you just kind of, I don't know, but a bit of an awkward look. Yeah, definitely an awkward look. I don't know. I just, you know, you mentioned the Grey Cup, and I just think, man, you know, we're getting into that time of year where we would be just rolling into that and talking about it, and, you know, we'd be right in the middle of it, and it's unfortunate, and I'm really hoping that that this time next year we are again.
Ryan Rashog from TSN. Shog, we had Kevin Woodley on the show earlier, and he was tracking. We've got him on homework projects in the off season, which is great. And so he was looking at, you know, the one stat he brought up, how where Tampa Bay really improved from the previous year was they limited their high danger chances. And St. Louis was near the top. You look at teams, Dallas was top four. The Islanders were top five. And these are teams that had long runs. The Oilers for the last 3 years, 5-on-5 goals against has been their nemesis. They really haven't made any sorts of inroads on that. Do you believe they can? And part of that will be the decrease, because the Oilers were 29th in high danger chances against last season, according to Clear Sight Analytics. And they're a lot more stringent in what they deem a high danger quality chance. I think some of the other stuff I see in a game, they'll be like, oh, there's 10 high danger chances in the first period. And I was like, what? So, you know, theirs is a lot more strict and rigid on what is a legit high danger chance. Do you think Edmonton can improve there?
can they improve there?
Well, they can, but will they, I guess?
I'm just repeating the question and thinking about it. I mean, listen, they just lost their most used defenseman, and he's the guy that was going to be on the ice the most for them next season, and the one that was, you know, kind of supposed to lead the way on that front. And then the hope was they were going to improve the blue line around him a little bit, and so everybody picked up the slack a little bit. Instead, they've brought in a different type of player to try and replace some of those minutes. They're going to rely on a younger kid more to replace some of those minutes, and they're going to bring in a guy that is real nice at moving the puck north to south, but is really going to have to buckle down defensively to be able to, you know, help make up for the loss of a guy like Oscar Klefbom. So, you know, I know it's more about more than just the decor. It's about the forwards and an overall commitment to playing both sides. And maybe, you know, maybe with a player like Kyle Turris, if he really, really commits to the defensive part of his game and really buys into that, you know, the Oilers have been without somebody at that three center spot that can really dig in on that front. And that can be an important person for them if Turris can do that. I think there's a chance, Gregs, but I'm not sure, given personnel-wise what they've got compared to what they've had, you know, especially on the blue line.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that all the additions they made, to me, it doesn't move the needle defensively at all. And it's hard for one person to come in and say, okay, now we're going to stop everything. It's not like a big linebacker, a big lineman that just shuts everything down or closes some issues. So I think that from whenever the season starts, that is the number one conversation that Tippett's got to have. He's got to be, guys, this isn't one person's job. It's everybody's job from your top center all the way down to your backup goalie, to your seventh defenseman. Like, we all have to have a greater desire to defend. And I think that's the biggest challenge for this group moving forward is, can they do that? Because, yeah, Kyle Turris, they might spend a little more time in the offensive zone. And, yes, the Puljujärvi might score a few more goals. And that's all fine and great. But you've got to be able to defend and make it hard for the other team to get into your zone, get the puck to the net. When the puck is coming to the net, can he lift sticks? Can he push guys away in front of the net? Like, I think that what happened, Shagar, for me, is that watching the Oilers play Chicago and then a month or two later watching Dallas and Tampa play against each other in such a tight series defensively, they're not even the same stratosphere based on, now it's unfair in that Chicago series, but even going back to the regular season, it just wasn't there.
Yes, I would agree with that. And that includes everybody on the roster. That includes the whole group.
Sure.
That when you watch teams win championships, there's an attention to detail defensively that everybody has to have, and if you don't, you're going to hit a wall. You will not get past a certain point in the Stanley Cup playoffs if you don't have total buy-in from your players on what's needed defensively. And so it's the entire group. And you develop that through, you know, you learn, you go through playoff wins and losses, and you go through some heartache, and you evaluate your overall game, you know, and that's how players improve, and the Oilers will improve dramatically just from the experience of what they went through here against Chicago. But it needs to be a quality that your team has and a quality that your team learns to harness and rely on in key moments. So you might not be able to do it every single night, and it might not be present every single night, but when you really need it, as a group, you know how to do it. You know how to find that level. And that involves, you know, not cheating for offense. That involves everybody back hard on the back check, picking up guys, you know, coming down lower in your own end, helping out the defenseman, being dogged in your determination in every single battle, both in the offensive zone and the defensive zone. It's like this mode that you see these teams click into that they access. And the Oilers weren't even close. They were not even close to having anything like that type of game that was required, and that's all of them. So, yeah, it wasn't something people like to hear, but, you know, as you watch the playoffs and you watch these championship teams and all their players, their superstars right down through, there's this thing they all figure out that if you don't, you just hit a wall. Every time in the playoffs, you'll hit that wall.
Ryan Rashog joins us from TSN. Shogar, I don't know. Did you read this story in regards to the Arizona Coyotes draft pick, Mitchell Miller? And what?
Yep.
Where do you come out on that?
Well, listen, this is a really tough one. You know, I'm a father and a father of teens, and so you know, you have a kind of a, when you come at it from the angle of a dad, you realize you have kids that, that make mistakes, and that at 14 years old, you know, these kids are still developing and they're still very young. And so you, what you don't want to have happen is for, you know, mistakes that kids make and terrible actions they take when they're young, to have to affect them and for them never have an, to have an opportunity to, you know, to bounce back and to learn from those mistakes and move on. So as a dad, that's where I start. But then you read the details of what actually happened, you know, to this poor young man. And it was really tough. It was really awful, the stuff that happened and the things that he endured. And, man, it's serious business, and he was dramatically affected by it. So, you know, as a parent, you see it from both sides, and it's tough from both ends. And so what I think is important is, okay, if you're an NHL team and you want to consider giving this player another opportunity, you got to do the research and you do the homework and you figure out, okay, how was this handled? And what lessons were learned? And what indications do we have that there were lessons learned? And you really got to dig in and make sure. And in all the details, and it was a very detailed article, you know, the one concern that I had about it, you know, never mind for a future in hockey or anything, but just for development and learning from a situation, it just seemed like there was a real lack of communication from the player himself to the player that he had wronged. And what I was looking for in that article was, how did this end up? Where was the apology? Where was the,
yes,
the heartfelt apology to show that he had really learned a lesson? And so, you know, I look at it more as a parent, and I think there was a failing here somewhere along the way where this wasn't made right, you know, where this young man wasn't made to apologize in truly appropriate fashion. Mm-hmm. And so, never mind draft picks and hockey, that's where I'm really upset about this. And I think that, you know, for the people in his life, you know, that needed to happen. That really needed to happen to make things right. And I'm all about second chances and teenagers learning lessons and not having to be, you know, have your life ruined by actions you take when you're 14. But it needs to be a complete lesson. And that was where my disappointment was in this whole thing, is it feels like it was an incomplete lesson. And I just feel so terribly for the young man who went through the bullying and the family, and then to have to see this player, you know, having some success and moving on, feeling like it was not completed properly. And that's where my issue was in this. And so if I were a team doing my due diligence, that would have been a question I have. Well, hang on a second. How did we make it right between you and this person? What actions did you take? I don't want to talk about court-mandated letters. I want to know what happened here. How did you make this right? And from everything I read, there was an unsatisfactory answer.
Yeah, I would agree. That was my one biggest concern about the whole thing was, you know, parents. And if I'm the Coyotes even now, I would encourage, that would be something I'd say, hey, that
100%.
You got to go to the young boy and say, hey, face to face, because I remember screwing up as a kid at 14. Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, even now, and you got to apologize to someone face to face rather than over email or anything else.
Yeah,
it's totally different.
And it's unfortunate. Like, you know, it sounds like, I'm sorry, I don't have the article right in front of me, and I feel terrible not using both of their names while I'm saying this. So I'm sort of trying to find it while we're talking, because I think I'd like to be saying their names. But it sounds to me like they tried to take some actions, you know, that letters were written, you know, to National Hockey League teams to explain what happened and all that. And those are all important steps, but the issue is they all ring hollow if the most important step of a face-to-face, heartfelt apology to the person that you've wronged. Because if you haven't found it in you to do that yet, then all these other actions that you're taking to show that you realize you made a mistake, they feel like they're more self-preservation than opposed to an indication of real change. And so that was the disappointing part for me. And I agree, Greg. I think there's still time for that. I think there's still reparations that can be made, and people will say, well, it's after the fact and blah, blah. Doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Somebody was wronged badly here. And admitting you're wrong and truly owning it is a big part of the learning process. And we got young teenagers here who did some pretty awful stuff, and they need the full lesson, and they need the, you know, the full experience to be able to truly say that they came through it and are better now, in my opinion. But I don't like the idea of anybody burying, you know, somebody for something they did when they were 14 years old. There are lessons we can learn. Let's make sure they're complete lessons. And as adults, let's make sure that these complete lessons happen.
Mitchell Miller was the draft pick, and Isaiah Meyer Crothers is the,
yes,
the young
Isaiah
the young
Meyer
boy.
Crothers, yeah.
Yeah, and he's you know, he was a black student, but he also had some developmental challenges.
Yeah.
So kind of had the brain capacity of a 10-year-old at the time, and what they did to him is awful. People, I don't really want to mention it on here.
It's really difficult, tough stuff, and it was terribly unfair that it happened. That should never have to happen to anybody. He obviously was dramatically affected by it, as was his family, and that family deserved a full and thorough and meaningful face-to-face apology, and that boy certainly deserved that as well. And for them to be sitting in a position right now feeling like they didn't get that, this is incomplete. And that I sense that this young player does want to move on and does want to be better, but it's incomplete to my eye at this point, and that's what I was disappointed in.
Yeah, I would agree. Shagar, we'll chat with you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Yeah, take care, guys.